Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, friends and neighbors, and welcome to Mud Till at Midnight. I'm your genial host, Mud Till Sasquatch. Thank you for joining me this evening. I'm just back from the theater. A little theater tonight. Went to the local production of Shrek, the musical. And there's some toe-tapping songs, mostly a kid's show, but maybe in some places just a little bit racier than I would take my kids to. But it was overall pretty good choice. Scores for being something that you could even consider taking your kids to. And it has a happy ending, and although personally that's not my cup of tea. If it's for a family thing, I would also be happy to have that be the case. I went with my brother. And we haven't gone together someplace for a long time, so that was still fun. There were a number of people in the show and working on the show that I knew, but I had to get back here to do this. And my brother had to get back here because he has a meeting in the morning. And it was also a very large venue. It's hard to find your way back to the backstage and talk to maybe a few people that you know. So we just kind of headed for the parking lot early, came straight back home. I'm sure we will encounter some of those people in other connections as the days go by, and as it's proper and serves the highest purpose for that to happen. So welcome once again to the show. Quite a bit to talk about this half hour, although whenever I think that, it seems like I always run out of stuff. And whenever, like last week when I thought I was going to be reaching for things, by the time we got to the end of the half an hour, it surprised me. How did I manage to get to the end of the half an hour? Of course, I don't know for a fact that I didn't sleep through half of the show last week. I was very tired. And I haven't gotten to the show archive to see what actually happened. Further, I don't remember a lot of what I talked about last week, so hopefully I won't repeat myself, although I have been known to do that from time to time. Let me just tell you that the trial that has been occupying my past few weeks is now over, so I am free to actually talk about that, about what was going on. And let me make it clear, I guess, from a couple of the comments I've gotten, I haven't made it clear enough. It's not my trial. I'm not in the trial. I'm not on trial. I was called for jury duty, and I'm serving on jury. I was serving on a jury in a trial. And as proof of that, I have my certificate, which I received from the Court of Common Pleas, Franklin County. And I can read this to you very quickly. I don't mean to do this. I'm not reading this for any sort of ironic effect or anything like that. I'm just reading it. It says, on behalf of the judges of this court and the citizens of Franklin County, we commend you for the contribution you have made to the cause of justice and the American form of government. Dispatching your duty as a citizen, you have demonstrated the continuing vitality of the jury system, which is based upon the impartial layman juror. Having served with distinction, we honor you with the certificate in appreciation of your sacrifice and your conscientious performance of an important duty of citizenship. And in recognition of a valuable contribution to the administration of justice in the Franklin County Court of Common Pleas. I don't disagree with anything in that. I do sometimes treat the institutions of our system with a fair amount of disdain, and I think rightfully so. But one of the institutions I do still have a lot. I mean, jury duty is one of the things I still have a lot of admiration for. I haven't been watching it the whole time, but I don't see that it has been perverted, at least not in the ways that most other systems have. It still works pretty much the way it was supposed to work. Now, I was in a jury trial, and the people who brought this case, they won $1.8 million. I didn't get to deliberate on the jury. I sat on the jury, but I was an alternate, so I didn't actually get to participate in the crafting of the verdict. they'd sit around for 2 days while it happened, and then came back, the jury came back, and they had awarded $1.8 million. Now, yes, down the road, that obviously it's going to be appealed, and that some judge could come along and reverse that verdict. And I think that's something that should only happen under the most extreme of circumstances. I think it happens far more often than it needs to, although, again, I haven't done the research. But still, I think having the jury system there, at least someone has to reverse it. You know, they have to take the effort to perform what might be an injustice. They can't just do it in one fell swoop. And I think, frankly, it makes it harder. It does make it harder for the wheels of justice to move in a way that's inappropriate when you have people who come in from the outside. And I think that's valuable to have people there. The system has become far too insular, whether it's the medical system, the legal system, religious systems, whatever. It's just it becomes very, very sort of tight and compact, and nobody from the outside ever comes in and has a look. Now, that would seem to run, I know many of you are running through your mud-toe books right now, would seem to run counter to my opinion that things should be run in, you know, small chunks, small systems rather than large systems. And I don't see a contradiction there. I think even in the smaller system, which I would favor, you need to have a turnover of authority and fresh blood to look at things. You need to, whether it's a big system or small system, you need to avoid entrenched authority. I just think that entrenched authority is a bigger problem than a big system. Just my opinion. You can have yours, and that's fine. It's fine for all of us to have opinion. That's why I'm here. I've been here, and also to share a bit of spiritual communion, if you will. This show is a part of my spiritual practice. For those of you who are new listeners, my practice is involves the written and spoken word, and my faith and my hope is that my words. First of all, the belief is that someone needs to hear my words, otherwise I wouldn't be moved to share them. And my faith and my hope and my belief is that, or my faith and my hope are, excuse me, that those words will somehow find whoever is out there who needs to hear them or see them. So that's why I'm here. And I've mentioned this in a few shows over the past month or so that I've wanted to. I felt my spiritual component of the show starting to creep out a bit and starting to focus more on the political social aspects and on my life, my things that were going on in my life that I could whine about. So I'm making a concerted effort to try and bring a little bit more spirituality back into the show. So and part of that is through sharing my prayers. And interesting, I'll tell the story and then I'll share the prayers. We were in voir dire, which is where they select the jurors, and they brought us 30 of us in, and they were going to pick 11, 8 jurors and 3 alternates. So the attorneys, they get you to ask all kinds of questions because they want to figure out who they want on the jury and who they don't. And this one jury had asked each juror to say, let's make sure I get this right, what they were best at and what they valued in life. And my jury, you know, this pool of 30, I was juror number 26, so I'm like almost last. So all of the obvious answers, you know, that I'm good at, you know, work or good at organization or good at planning, the stuff like that was all taken long before they got to me. And ditto, things important to you, family, health, whatever. So they get to me, I'm trying to think of what I'm going to say. Well, what am I good at? So I said, when he got to me, he asked me what I was good at, and I said, prayer. Now, I don't know. What is the standard? What is it that makes you good at prayer? I'm not sure. But I pray every day. And so I get a lot of practice. And I feel, this is going to sound terrible, I was going to say, I feel my prayers are better than the ones that I read in prayer books. That might not be true. I've read some good prayers in prayer books. but they're very flowery, and they're very sort of off point. I think they just take too long to get to the point. I pray very directly. Just, I say what I'm going to do when I get out. So I'm getting a lot of requests, for general requests over Facebook, not directed to me, but to anybody, saying, please, you know, please pray for my uncle, whoever, who went to the hospital forever. I've been seeing, seems like I've been seeing a lot more of that here lately than I had in the past. And I've been, I feel sort of compelled, since I do call myself a shaman, to pray when I'm asked to pray. Especially say, I only pray when I'm asked to. If someone asks me to, even if they aren't asking me directly, I do sort of feel compelled to do it. So, I'm as part of this evening's program, I want to ask for prayers for the friends and relatives of all of my friends and relatives on Facebook who have friends and relatives who are not feeling well, have illnesses of mind, body, or spirit. I ask for the sort of standard prayer they use. If it's the only prayer for you, just they ask for just prayers for my whomever. Excuse me, and they'll say health, restored health for whomever, the friends and relatives. And peace of mind, something like that. Peace of mind for the people they love. Because I think often when people pray for someone that they're concerned about, they're really praying for themselves, or at least are also praying for themselves. It's like, what am I going to do? You know, how am I going to deal with this situation? I think is where that prayer is often going. Of course, they care about the person that they're praying for. I'm not saying that they don't. There's concern for the person that they're praying for, and then want that person back. They want that person in their life. But then there's also the feeling of, what happens if this goes wrong? What am I going to do? Have I done the right thing? You know, am I doing everything that I can? So in my prayer, I like to honor and pray for first the person who's actually feeling the ailment, and then also all of their loved ones who are feeling the impact of that ailment and are, you know, feeling perhaps doubt or just a feeling of displacement within themselves. So that's the prayer I'd invite you to share with me this evening for anyone who is experiencing the illness of a loved one. First of all, healing for that loved one, because we want that loved one to heal. But then also healing for the person who's feeling the loss and feeling the doubt, feeling the pain that's attached to having someone ill and not knowing what to do about it. So that's that. And thank you for sharing that with me today. Obviously, you don't have to. You can pray the prayer, pray the prayer if you wish. You can just sort of hold it in your heart if you wish. You can completely dismiss it if you wish. It's all good. And of course, this is all done with the highest good in mind. It's let the results reflect the highest good, and it turns into the spirit or however it is you wish to express that. So there I got, kind of broke away from my court story there. We were listening to the testimony for 10 days, and then, as I said, I sat out for 2 days while the actual jurors deliberated. And it was, I can tell you now, a medical negligence case. A young man had gotten into a car accident, and he had multiple injuries. He had a bleeding on his brain. He had facial injuries and some other things. It was like 18 separate injuries that he had. And part of his treatment plan was they wanted to fix facial injuries. They were not trivial. They were very bad breakings of the bone. You know, it threatened his sight. He wasn't able to eat properly because of it. So they brought in a plastic surgeon, and they were going to fix that. But, of course, there was concern about the injuries to his brain. So they called in a neurosurgeon, and the neurosurgeon took a CAT scan. He looked at it and said, it's all good. The bleeding on the brain has stopped. It's fine for you to go ahead and do your surgery. But the problem was the young man got cold feet. at the last minute and balked and didn't want to do the surgery. Over a period of days, the doctor talked to him, the family talked to him, his friends talked to him. They finally talked him into having the surgery. Like 3 days later, they send him in for the surgery, but no one thought it would be prudent to ask the neurosurgeon to evaluate him again 3 days later. They just went with the original report. And so he went to surgery, and he never woke up. When they had trouble waking up, they took him up for another CAT scan and found out that some terrible things had happened inside his skull. And what happens, I don't know if I should get quite this graphic or not, but if graphic stuff disturbs you, just don't listen for the next 30 seconds or so. The skull is a closed vessel, so if there's bleeding going on, there's nowhere for the blood to go. So his skull just filled up with blood, and it squeezed his brain to death, basically, is what happened. And they showed us autopsy photos and all kinds. It was a pretty grotesque process. So the question was asked, should the doctors have asked the neurosurgeon to come check him out again? In this case, I keep saying "and." I'm sorry, I have to think of a different way to keep linking my sentences together. The fight has been going on for 4 years, I guess. So the parents have brought the lawsuit, and it took 4 years for them to finally get their day in court. And as I said, they were suing for $8 million. The jury awarded them $1.8 million, and it'll be appealed. And maybe it'll be overturned. I don't know. But it was interesting to see the process unfold, although I think I might have preferred, if I had the choice, I would have preferred to have participated in a little bit less unfolding. I just had the subject matter be a little bit less weighty. I would have preferred somebody suing over potato chips than somebody suing over, someone else's life, someone's life ending, perhaps wrongly. And it was the way the trial unfolded was this, because it's a medical trial, and I shouldn't say that. I'm not an expert on medicine. This is the only trial I've ever been involved in. I'll just say what I observed. Most of the witnesses were expert witnesses. Most of them were doctors. And they bring one in, and they'd swear on in. And one of the lawyers would start off on the medical record of the case. And going through it point by point, this happened on this day, this happened on this day. Was this okay? Yes, that was okay. Was this okay? Yes, that was okay. Was this no, they shouldn't have done that, that kind of thing. They go through point by point by point by point. And then the other lawyers, there were multiple lawyers, there was the plaintiff's lawyer, the people who were suing, and then there was the trauma surgeon, plastic surgeon, and there was a lawyer for the hospital. And originally the anesthesiologist was there too, but halfway through the trial they excused him. I don't know whether they decided they didn't have a case against him or whether his insurance company settled or what happened. They didn't tell us what happened. But he left the trial like halfway through. But for most of the trial, there were four lawyers, and for a short part of it, there were five. So they would all take their turn, going after this expert witness and trying to shake his testimony. And then when they were all done, they would excuse the witness and they would bring in the next one and would start all over again. They go right back to the top of the medical record, going through point by point. So we got to be pretty, we meaning myself and the other members of the jury, got to be pretty conversant with those medical records before those 10 days were over with, because we certainly saw them plenty of times. What impressed me about it was, I hate to say it this way, but really how sloppy they were. And of course, there's always the joke about how badly doctors write. But I mean, you're talking about an official record where people are going to, we were going back, they were being sued for millions of dollars, and we were judging whether they had done the right thing or not based on what they had written in the records, and you couldn't read it. I couldn't read it. We had to take the word for someone else was telling us what it said. I guess I don't know, if I was teaching somebody how to keep records, I think my advice would be presume someday someone's going to be suing you for $8 million, and your your fate rests on the jury being able to read this. Maybe they'll slow your handwriting down a bit. But the verdict came back, it was just against the one doctor, the trauma surgeon who was the head of the team. They didn't award any damages against the plastic surgeon, I guess thinking that he was relying on the trauma surgeon for the information. And they were also suing, well, they were suing the hospital, specifically they were suing the nursing staff. I think the decision there was just, the nurses were doing, what they were supposed to do. They were writing things down on the chart, and if the doctors didn't look at it, it wasn't their fault if the doctors didn't look at it. What they were writing down was that he was having headaches, that the patient was having headaches. And, that could have been significant. Now, the doctors are saying that's not significant because he was in a car crash and he's going to have headaches. It's a lot of stuff to wade through. And I guess for me, I didn't get to participate in the verdict. But for me, if I had been the trauma surgeon or if I had even been the plastic surgeon, I would have wanted to hear one more time from the neurologist, I think. If it had been me in that spot and I was about to cut into the guy and I knew that he had, problems, that there were issues, I would want to hear from the neurologist, if only just to, just to take the onus off of me. But not just that, for myself, I would want to have the best, that there's going to be the best chance that this is going to succeed. But even if I wasn't concerned about that, I would at least want to be off the hook. Why wouldn't you? So I guess, and then what was awkward about that was I ended up after the trial riding down in the elevator with the plastic surgeon's father. And I didn't share that little thing that I just shared with you. I just talked to him a little bit. And that was odd because while we were jurors in the trial, as you know, if you've been listening to the show at all, you're not allowed to talk about what's going on. So I know you particularly are allowed to talk with other people involved in the trial. So you just avoid each other, you'd see a lawyer, and one of the lawyers in the trial hall, he's like, sort of turn to get away, walk away. I end up taking a lot of elevator rides by myself, because the people just wouldn't, we'd all be walking toward the elevator, and they'd just stop and wait. They wouldn't go down on the elevator with me. It's sort of a feeling of power in that, almost. Ha-ha! Cannot ride in the elevator with me. I am the juror. And our little jury badges that we wore all over the place. It's a very nice building, a very, very powerful building. A whole complex is a bunch of the various courthouses are there, sort of in the same place downtown. There's an interesting, that's the other thing I was going to observe. The whole field of medical negligence is an interesting one to enter into because even in my spirituality, there is an overlap between medicine and spirituality, medicine and God. The people who practice medicine, at least in the tradition, are thought to be connected to God in a way that other people aren't. And we sort of see that in Western medicine as well, if only because of the way doctors present themselves. Medicine is sort of its own spirituality, its own religion, and the doctors are the ones who practice it, and you dare not question them just the same way as, at least as children, were taught not to question the clergy. So you have this very powerful this juxtaposition of this combination of power and spirituality in the medical profession. And then it's coming up against the legal profession. I mean, the law is where power lives. So you have these very two institutions that are not used to being questioned, and they're up against each other. And it's very, very interesting often to see that unfold. The lawyers questioning the doctors, and the doctors often taking the attitude, how dare you question me? Fun to watch. It would have been, certainly would have been amusing if what I was there to do wasn't so brave. It wasn't so important. We weren't dealing with someone who had died. If we weren't dealing with someone who had died, I could have had a lot more fun. as it was. And I was alternate number one, which meant if anything had happened to any of the regular jurors, I would have been in there. So I didn't feel I could just, you know, la-di-da. I felt like I needed to pay attention. And I wanted to pay attention. I wanted to be involved in the process. And I was interested. I was very interested in what was unfolding. I couldn't detach from it totally because, you know, I could have at any time have been called upon to participate. A good experience, something that I'm glad I did, something I'm glad I had the opportunity to do. The portion was a little large. But as I said, as I believe I said last week, I think when we came in, they told us, hey, you'll get one trial, it'll be a day, maybe two, and then you'll be out. And we were there 10 days for trial and 2 days for deliberation. On the bright side, that's $240. Of course, they aren't going to pay me until September, but I will have more than enough to pay my bills for September. I will have to keep going back to my parents to borrow the money. So there is that. Always look on the bright side. Always look on the bright side of life. I had the opportunity to see my daughter's new condo this week. And I'm very pleased to report that the young one has done very well for herself. She and her husband have worked very hard and can now afford a very nice place, probably nicer than, let's see, by some measures, nicer than any place that I've ever lived. So they've done very well. It's a set of condo. It's one of these sort of, I call it a vertical arrangement, you know, sort of small cross sections, but a number of levels. I think it's four levels. The bedrooms at the top, and the maybe it's only three. I'm not thinking because there's bedrooms at the top. It is four. Bedrooms at the top, and then sort of the family room / living room and a kitchen. On the sort of ground level, the ground at the front, and then the next level is ground in the rear, so there's a difference in elevation. And that's where they've got what's probably another family room or an office that people lived there before used it as an office. And there's a basement, and it's a semi-finished basement. So there's four levels of living space, and they have a deck on the back of two of them, which is nice, and there's a spiral staircase connecting the two, which I think is great, but my son-in-law doesn't like it. He wants to take it out. So, cooling on him. But he and him need his house, which is pretty fun. And then not too far off the back porch is a lake, which is a little bit disconcerting because I got that four-year-old granddaughter. And, you know, I'm going to be thinking about that. I'm going to be thinking about that lake out there. And it's not, we knew about the lake, and my mother told me, when you go there, find out the lake. How far is it from the lake? And it's not far from the lake at all. So we'll keep happy thoughts. You know, we'll keep happy thoughts that there aren't going to be, that there's going to be respect for the water. There's going to be respect for the water spirits. That's it. I'll speak to my granddaughter about respect for the water spirits. Or maybe I won't. I don't know. I don't want to put ideas in her head. I'll tell you what, that'll be next week's prayer. I'm going to pray for what I should do about my daughter and the water spirits. Okay, we're done for this week. I hope you'll join me next week when I'll have lots more irrelevant stuff to talk about and hopefully at least one thing that you can take with you that'll make your week better. Once again, thank you for joining me and have a pleasant good evening.